Welcome to the Age of Stories, a podcast about the stories from the people of the 21st century. We're broadcasting over Twitch every Sunday, 7 p.m. Central Time, and are open to chatting with friends during the show. I'm your host, Frozen Fallout. My co-host is Mo DeRory, who helped me create a 40-person, 4-table Gen Con event, and our other podcast, Crossing Darkness.
And today we will be interviewing Ty Christian from Lords of the Trident, which is an American metal band from Madison, Wisconsin. How's it going, Ty?
It's going fantastic. How are you guys?
Doing great. Doing great. Mike is recovering, I believe, so he might be...
Yeah, we had a Great Taste of the Midwest yesterday. It was...
I haven't been to Great Taste in a couple of years. For the people who are watching who are not familiar with what Great Taste is, it's like... And you know, correct me if I'm wrong here, I think it's like 200-ish, like, beer... brewers, right?
Yeah, and they breweries.
And they bring their craziest beers, you know.
Most of them do.
And you get a cup, and you can go around and you can have as many samples as you want. The last time I was at Great Taste, it was me and the Baron, and our guitar player, and we had a lot of fun, and by the end, he was like, hey, I could do a flip into these bushes, and he did a flip into bushes, and I peed on a bank. It was a time, man, you know?
Yeah,
I still drive by that bank, and I'm like, I peed on that. I shouldn't have done that. I hope there's no cameras, but they're so close to Great Taste. You know, that bank probably gets peed on. That's probably like a regular occurrence now that I think about it.
They're a bank. You know? They can afford it.
Yeah,
If you've lived in Madison for long enough and you've been a drinker in Madison, you've probably peed on a few banks.
Watch out, Associated Bank. You're next.
Yeah, so I'm a little bit hungover, but yeah. So, Lords of the Trident.
That's us.
How did you guys get started?
Oh, well, let's see. It's kind of an interesting story because I've been in bands for a million freaking years. I started my first band when I was 14 in my garage, and then when I came down to college, I started another band. Came down to college in 2003. Started another band. We were going solid for 5 years. And then, you know, kind of everybody went their separate ways when our bassist kind of went to MIT and our other guitarist who's going to law school and all that sort of stuff. And a year before that, or two, three years before that, now that I think about it, I lived in the dorms with Aki, who, of course, goes by Asian Metal in the band. He's my best friend. And at the time, I was really into the bands that I were in, more along the lines of like alternative rock, funk, kind of like a Pearl Jam, Soundgarden-y, Red Hot Chili Peppers kind of a feel. And I remember, you know, we were stuck in this tiny dorm room, he and I. And of course, we were studying our butts off, and he would love to listen to music while he studied, and I had no problem with it. Our chairs were back to back. You know, we had one computer here, one computer there, and he would play this music, and I'd turn around to him and I'd be like, "Which one? What's this?" He's like, "Oh, that's Iron Maiden." I'm like, "Huh? That's pretty good." That's pretty good, you know. And then, you know, a couple hours later, hey, what's this one, Aki? Oh, it's Judas Priest. Ah, whoa. This is, wow, that's pretty, you know. I had zero idea of you know, heavy metal. I think a lot of people, right? Metal is such a polarizing word. You say metal to a person who's not in the genre, and they immediately think of like long-haired dudes in like pointy leather jackets with BC Rich pointed guitars, just going like yeah, and like angry at their dads, playing very dissonant music, very hard to listen to. When in fact, as I learned, heavy metal is so broad; it probably has the most subgenres of any genre of music out there. And you know, that you could listen to on the radio, a lot of like even 80s hard rock that people would say is metal. You know, your Poison, your I mean, Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, Dio, all that sort of stuff. Where, you know, a person uninitiated, the uninitiated into the heavy metal subgenres would say, oh, that's rock or something like that. They would never peg it as heavy metal. So Aki kind of helped me along in my journey of like understanding like what heavy metal was, and he really got me into it. I remember I bought when I was in high school, I bought a Manowar DVD set because I thought it was, because one of my friends showed me a Manowar, you know, music video somewhere on the internet, and I thought it was hilarious, and so I bought that DVD set. And we would watch that DVD set, and we'd just be sitting there going, like, do these guys, like, do they know or do they not know? Like, are they in on it or are they not? You know, it's like Manowar, for anybody who knows Manowar, like, you know they're 100% in on it, but there's that little thing in the back of your mind going, like, these guys must know how ridiculous this is. They've got to know. They've got to know. And so we would, you know, we'd watch this over and over and over again. And later on that year, we ran into somebody who ended up being from my hometown, who was a year younger than us, and it was in the same dorms as we were. And the dude was an absolute insane shredder, absolutely wildly talented. And Aki and him hit it off right away because they were the only two dudes in like the general area who could keep up with each other on guitars, right? So one night, we're all hanging in the dorm room. Aki's got his little tiny practice amp. Brian, this guy, has his little tiny practice amp. And they're just noodling around. And I got my headphones on. I'm playing some computer game or whatever. They give me a tap on the shoulder, and they say, hey, Ty, we came up with, like, a song idea. Can you record this on your computer? And I looked at him, and I said, I don't know. Let's find out. And we were awake until 3 in the morning recording easily the worst demo I've ever, like, the worst sounding demo I've ever recorded. We had so much fun. At 1 a.m., we went around. We were on the first floor in the dorms. We went around to everybody whose door was open. And we're like, hey, we need a men's chorus real quick to, like, shout kill and die at the top of their lungs. Can you guys all just crowd into our dorm room real quick? You know, and so we did, and it was awesome. And the RA, the main guy who's keeping watching everybody, came by and he's like, guys, you can't scream kill and die at the top of your lungs at 1:30 in the morning. You just can't. And we're like, sorry, we'll copy paste, it's fine. So we just, we got maybe a minute and a half of this song done. And Aki goes, you know what this needs? This needs some vocals. Ty, you're a singer. Yeah, do some vocals. And I'm like, what do I do? I have no lyrics. I have no melody. I've got nothing. And he's like, yeah, you could do like the high, like, ah! kind of stuff, right? Just think Manowar. Just do it. And so they hit record and close the door. And I was like, and I just, you know, it was 1:30 in the morning. I just sang whatever crazy bullshit was in my brain. And somehow it worked. And that first take is still the lyrics of that song to this day. It's a song off our first album called The Virgin Vault. And it just, those are now the lyrics. I've been singing them for 13 years. The stuff that I came up with off the top of my head in the dorm rooms. So you know, we had a lot of fun doing this. It's so much so that we said, hey, you want to, let's get together next weekend. And you know, back in that time, let me tell you, Facebook was still just college only. And so we had a group of people who were all at UW-Madison, all in the dorm area where we were at, because that was the only people that we were connected with on Facebook. And so we posted these demos on Facebook, and the first one we posted, we're like, oh, what should the name of the band be? And And we're like, we can't just do like Ty, Aki, and Brian. That's dumb. We gotta have something like fucking like big, you know, like, oh,
yeah.
We gotta have something like very metal. And so they're like, Ty, what should it be? And I'm just, you know, it's another one of those instances of like 1:30 in the morning brain. I'm like, Lords of the Trident, unite! And so we called ourselves Lords of the Trident Unite for a long time. And so, you know, the story goes, we just kept meeting up, making demos, making songs. It was a recording project for a long, long time. And then revisit the start of my story where I said I had this, you know, I had this band and we were breaking up. Everybody was going their separate ways. I was on my victory lap year in college, my fifth year, because I ended up being a triple major, which is stupid. I wouldn't recommend that to anybody, but I did it.
What'd you major in?
I did computer science, Japanese, and East Asian studies. Those were my three majors.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so and so I was on that fifth year victory lap, you know, finishing up the last couple classes, and my alternative rock and funk and, you know, rock band generally was just kind of breaking up. And it was the summer of that final year, and everybody was already gone. And I had nothing to do, but I had my guitar and my amps and my PA and everything. I still had them all down in Madison. And so I say to Aki, I'm like, you know, you want to just, like, should we just, like, find a bassist and a drummer and just, I don't know, do a couple shows as Lords of the Trident? You know, just for fun. And he's like, yeah, sure, why not? I talked to Brian, and we found a bassist, we found a drummer. And we started going out and playing shows. And, you know, my idea with it was like, okay, we got to out Manowar, right? We're going to have costumes and fire and explosions and just swords and armor. And it's going to be, everything's going to be set on fire all of the time. You know, Rammstein's going to wish they were us, kind of a thing. And by the third show, our third show ever, we did a CD release party of our, you know, our first album, which is like, the songs are good, the recording not so fabulous by today's standards, but we ended up selling out a local venue that was like 120 capacity, and we don't know how that happened, like, honestly. We think maybe some of the people that saw it on Facebook told their friends, and we did a bunch of like really dumb, stupid flyers that we put everywhere. But anyway, that had never happened to me in any other band ever. I'd never played to a place that packed, or a place where people knew the lyrics and were singing along to these dumb songs that I came up in the dorm room, you know, at 1:30 in the morning. And I think I might have done my first stage dive ever that night, and that was pretty fun. And so we were done with the show, and we were sitting down in the green room, which was downstairs in this place. It was at the Frequency, for your Madisonians out there listening. We were down in the basement of the Frequency, all kind of looking at each other in shock, like, I guess we want to keep this going past the summer then? And 13 years later, here we are.
Dude, you guys put on a spectacle. Like, it is something that you remember with the pyrotechnics that you guys do, like the running around with the Guitar Hero on fire, the guitar here from Guitar Hero, yep, on fire in the crowd. You get in there, you guys connect with crowds really well.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's one of those things that I could see, like, the costumes, like, if you guys were doing that from the start, like, that's the way to go. Like, I imagine that helped out a lot, as well as, you know, a lot. I mean, there's a lot that goes into drawing a spectacle once you have a spectacle,
yeah,
as well.
Absolutely. And I mean, that was very calculated. And that was calculated because I came from the outsider's perspective, right? The rest of the guys in the band were not super on board with the costumes and the stage show and the whole thing. But, you know, I had in my brain exactly what I told you guys initially. Like, if you know, Joe Frat House looks at a thing and they see, you know, metal band, like, they're not interested, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've immediately lost. If it's just a bunch of guys in t-shirts with their arms crossed going like, you know, like,
I'm Metallica.
Yeah, nobody, you can't capture someone who is a non-metalhead to that. You know, that is immediate turnoff. But if you say, you know, metal show, and then you get these guys all in costumes, like, you know, looking crazy, at least, at the very, very least, a couple people will look at that and go like, well, I mean, we might not like the music, but look, I mean, like, we got to see what this is all about.
Got to watch this. Know? Like, I'll sit at a bar and watch this.
Yeah, exactly. And you know,
the crazy thing is, that is the reason I went to your first show.
See?
It was, I think it was 10 years ago. You played the Regent Street Retreat, and my friend Sean came to me, and he's like, hey, I'm going to this show tonight. It's the Lords of the Trident. This guy, he runs around, he lights shit on fire, there's explosions. I'm like, oh, okay. Didn't even care what kind of music it was.
The system works, you know? And I mean, like, I will tell you that I partially stole that idea from a band called P-Lander Z. If anybody out there is familiar with P-Lander Z, they're a Japanese, like, noise punk band. And they come out in, like, matching costumes. The music, it's all right. It's okay. But the stage show, like, I probably wouldn't buy a P-Lander Z CD, but I bought the crap out of their DVD, let me tell you. Immediately I was like, I got to get this. And so I wanted to take that crazy, amazing stage show and mix it with some, you know, equally amazing musicianship and kind of put that together. And I mean, like, just like you said, I mean, it seems to have worked. People will come to see it, you know, whether or not they think they like the music, and that's helped us out quite a bit. So
one thing I've always wondered is, did you ever get any inspiration or do anything with Dungeons and Dragons? A lot of your songs are just dungeons. Like, it's just like, it's what I want to listen to while I'm playing some Dungeons and Dragons or World of Darkness, or like the Set song that you have just reminds me of, like, the followers of Set, like the dungeon, or the Frost.
The Frost Worm from Knights of Dragons Deep. Oh,
yep.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. I'm a huge gamer. I love Dungeons and Dragons. My first love, however, and you with the bookshelf full of Vampire the Masquerade books will appreciate that. Like, I played D&D. I loved D&D, but my preference was Vampire the Masquerade, specifically because I ended up with a bunch of D&D games with, like, just straight up rules lawyers who were all about the math. And I was always all about the story. You know,
I feel you, man. Always... I feel you so much.
Yeah. And the number one rule of it, the first thing that this says in the first page of Vampire the Masquerade, it says, look, if any of these rules contradict what the person telling the story wants to happen, throw them out. You know? And that I loved. So I took a lot of inspiration from D&D, a lot of inspiration from just role playing in general. I still, you know, occasionally will do some role playing with friends, but yes, it's absolutely 100%, you know, very pulled from that sort of lore, you know, the D&D, the vampire, all that sort of stuff.
Yep, no, I feel you so much because I have the same kind of thing. I played a lot of Dungeons and Dragons. I DM ever since I was like 14. I've played Dungeons and Dragons, the Vampire the Masquerade, and Vampire the Masquerade is the first game that I played. But everybody always wanted to play Dungeons and Dragons, and it was all about the rules, and it was all about the you know, strategic combat, which is a lot of fun, but it was more like playing a video game, and without the video at this point, and, you know, and being able to do a lot of role playing. So when I did it, it was interesting. I took over some Dungeons and Dragons and stuff, and we didn't have a chess explored or any kind of map or anything at that point. So I was like, mind's eye at motherfuckers, like, that's how they're gonna do this. But in general, I always moved much more towards the storyteller system, and I just always, and it's always been my thing that I've always wanted to do. I've, you know, started doing events at Gen Con. We have our Madison Under Siege. I'm doing a Mage the Ascension book right now, a city book for Madison, the 77 square miles surrounded by reality. Just
nice. Perfect
for a tradition powerhouse that nobody else has ever done. You know, there aren't really any mage cities. Like, there's Las Vegas. They got a little bit of a Las Vegas, but that's a really kind of, like, small kind of thing comparatively to... There's a lot of weirdness with Las Vegas and how they kind of set that up.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to make a tradition city that was just like, here's the traditions. This is where they hang out, and it's Madison, Wisconsin. And our story of Madison is nuts. Like, how Madison gets created is just weird. There's no reason Madison should be a capital of anything, much less a town. But some dude was like, I'm going to purchase this land and I'm going to get everybody. But yeah, that's awesome, dude. So I thought for sure, I thought I've talked to you guys at the Wizard Con event that you guys did at the bowling alley. I'm not sure did you guys play Wraith as well too, or was there anybody in your band who played Wraith?
Our current guitarist may have played Wraith at some point, but
There was somebody that I remember during that time that was really talking about Wraith and they really loved it, but maybe it wasn't your group. But it's just awesome though that I really feel that in your music 100%.
I'm definitely, all of the stuff that I like to play and like to engage in is definitely story forward. And in fact, it's the new album that we just finished is our first concept record that we've ever done, and it's got a really big, in-depth, sprawling story from start to finish. We got some artists to do like concept art for every song that's going to appear in the booklet, we've got these amazing like big murals that tell the entire story. It's just, you know, like a tapestry of like a tapestry style, like stained glass sort of a thing. So yeah, there's a lot like story related stuff that's coming up. I think most people who make music get to the point, and I certainly have, I'm certainly there right now, where like you get so close to the thing that you're making that you think it's terrible and no one's gonna like it ever. Pretty much every album I've gotten to that point. And my saving, you know, grace of this is I said to myself, well, you know what? If nobody likes this album, at least it'll be some good fodder for some D&D campaigns, because the world that we've built is really interesting. So I'm excited for people to experience this new thing that we've got going on the new album.
So that's awesome. So for the album, you created like a world so that it you have like a consistent storyline throughout the entire album.
Yep.
That is epic, because I mean a few of your albums feel like that is actually the way that they are. I mean, but it doesn't seem continuous all the way through. It seems like there's some songs that mesh really well with each other, and then to a certain degree the whole album doesn't feel necessarily 100% one story. But if you're doing one whole huge, just one pure story, that's awesome.
Yeah, we've had a few songs from now and then that mesh together, that where we've kind of created, like, this is part one, this is part two, this is part three. We've never gone out and said, that's what we're doing, you know, except if somebody asks or, you know, but we've never, like, written that down anywhere officially. I think the reason that we have, that a lot of the songs feel very fleshed out in terms of, like, a world is because, I think it's myself, you know, on that story-loving kind of side, but also Aki, especially, will always pepper me with very pointed questions whenever I create any lyrics, you know, about X, Y, or Z. He'll say, you know, oh, okay, there's a dragon. Well, what, you know, what kind of a dragon is it, and how did it get there, and why is it there, and how long was it there? He'll want me, even if I don't say it anywhere in the song, he will want an entire backstory of the whole thing front to back, or he will, like, say, like, nah, like, rewrite it. You know, he'll say, pass on this one. So, you know, that's helped me as a writer, too. It's good to have somebody just kind of, like, on my back with that, you know?
Interesting. Yeah, you should write this as a like small story, like book pamphlet for each one of the albums, and you know, you might be able to play around like that. That just sounds awesome to hear. Like, just, I would love to have that. There's like, oh, I've got this album. Also, I've got this like Dungeons and Dragons book that tells me how to play in the world. Like, you could even go all the way to like make a book for it. In like, they have Dungeons and Dragons and World of Darkness both have the ability for you to sell books for them. You know, make modules.
Yeah,
and make...
like a module would be an interesting thing to do. That's for sure.
Yeah, and then you could have. This is the music you should play during this scene and this scene.
I'll add that to my ever increasing to-do list.
Right, yeah. I'm sure you don't have anything else to do, so you should get working right on this immediately.
No, I'm basically idle at this point.
Speaking of which, what are you up to recently? What's I know that you got Mad for Power Fest that's coming up. That was sold out forever ago. What are some of the other things? And talk about Mad for Power Fest. What's going on with that?
Yeah, so the big thing coming up, obviously, is coming up in 2 weeks is our festival that we run every year, Mad with Power Fest, and it is an arcade, pinball, and heavy metal festival. What we do is we take a large venue here in Madison, Wisconsin, about 500 capacity venue, and we fill all of the available wall space and some of the floor space with free play arcade and pinball games. And then we bring in bands from all over the U.S. and sometimes all over the world to play the festival. This is our, if you count the canceled, you know, if you count the cancellation last year when we did like a live stream thing, this will be our fifth year as a festival, although it is Mad with Power 4, since obviously we didn't get to do it last year. But yeah, this is the first time that it's a two-day fest. We've usually done it as a one-day fest. We've been building it slowly over the years. The year before, in 2019, it sold out completely, and we were hoping that it would sell out completely in 2020, which is now 2021. And it did. It sold out in under 3 days. It was like tickets were available, and then boom, 400 tickets just gone. So that was really surprising and really encouraging to me. But now, obviously, since there's 2 weeks to go, there's just a ton of work to do. As a festival, we try to give everybody the most bang for their buck, because I've certainly been to quite a few festivals that have cost hundreds of dollars, you know, and you get like a tiny program printed out on like a, you know, 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper where you're like, okay, cool. You know, and you have to wait in line and pay money for autographs and things like that. We give the people who pay for like our, well, first off, we try to keep our costs as low as possible. We absorb all of the, you know, quote unquote convenience fees or ticket fees that you, when you purchase tickets online. We actually built our own ticketing system from the ground up in order to not use anybody else's, in order to absorb those fees for, you know, for the people who are coming to the fest. Because personally, I hate it when, you know, you go and, oh, tickets are $50, and then it ends up being $75 because there's some sort of like Ticketmaster or something.
Yeah, I was about to say, so what, you know, you're not liking the Ticketmaster fee? They're convenient.
No.
So I used to work for Ticketmaster for a very short amount of time when I was working at Reserve America. They like bought up Reserve America and had us sell tickets for them. And I just remember very distinctly hearing that doesn't sound very convenient to me every day.
Did they make you glue on the devil horns, or did you paint them on? How did you?
Oh man, they had us dress up in full devil, and we had the pitchfork and everything. It was and then we got fried in the butt, you know, just you know, every 20 minutes just to keep us awake.
Oh yeah, that's how they do it. But yeah, so we, you know, we keep our costs very low. Like a 1 day ticket this year is $20, you know, and I mean $20 for all you can play arcade and pinball, plus, you know, I mean, on any given day it's 6 bands. I mean, that's kind of unheard of. So we try to keep costs as low as we can. The people who the first 100 people through our door get like a gift bag full of all sorts of like free stuff from local companies that sponsor us. You know, hand sanitizer and, you know, pens and one of the companies who was in Illinois sent us a herb grinder for herbs, if you know what I mean. Probably hard cheeses too. You know, if you get a chunk of Parmesan, just put it in there, grind it up, boom, your pizza's ready. But you know, so like we try to provide as much value as possible for the money that people are spending. And so, you know, a lot of the work that I'm doing right now is obviously packing those bags and just coordinating with bands and with the venue and all that sort of stuff. Although we are sold out, we also do have live stream tickets available. And this is the first year that we're doing like a full-on big giant live stream. We're doing multiple cameras. It's going to be fully mixed. It's going to be awesome. And you can either get a live stream ticket by going to madwithpowerfest.com and buying a ticket. A ticket, by the way, live stream for both days, Saturday and Sunday, is just $20. Or if you don't want to even spend $20, you can join the Lords of the Trident Patreon at the $10 level, and you'll get a live stream link there too. So again, you know, we try to keep costs low for everybody, because yeah, we just want more people to be able to enjoy the music. So that's going on. We already have right now we already have about 8 out of the 12 bands confirmed for next year's festival. And we're working on our headliners right now. That's another thing that I'm kind of working on. So we got that going on. That's the big thing coming up. The thing that's making me making my hair turn gray at the moment. I will say, you know, side tangent here. We also very recently, you know, announced that, like, yo, if you're coming to Mad with Powerfest, you got to be vaccinated. Mm-hmm. And we're probably going to check at the door just to make sure that everybody's safe, you know, and we're going to recommend people wear masks, but this is a vaccinated only event. You cannot, we have to have proof of vaccination for you to enter. And you wouldn't think that would be a big of a deal, but my God, this is the first time ever in my life that I have had my face photoshopped onto Hitler before. So that was quite the event, you know. I'm like, oh, I've gotten that famous now, huh? Oh,
yeah,
he's
wow.
Photoshopped onto Hitler. So anyway,
I saw some of that drama on Facebook in the last 2 weeks or so.
Yeah, and you know, I will say that I have very, 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 very little patience for that sort of a thing, because the people that are going and you know, going out and refusing to get the vaccine are not only hurting potentially themselves, they're not only hurting potentially other people, but they are hurting live music in general. You know, we were coming out of this and we were seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, and everybody started to plan tours and shows, and we were like, we could finally go back to like being a normal, you know, playing in front of real people again instead of just playing live streams in our basement. And because of the people who refuse to get vaccinated, like directly because of them, we are sort of plummeting back into this situation. So without being too much of a doom and gloomer or getting on my soapbox at all, I will absolutely not, you know, I won't let anybody in who is unvaccinated. And a lot of this is, you know, carrot and stick. You know, if these people are going to behave like petulant children and not play well in the sandbox with other people, I'm going to take their toys away. Sorry. You know, you're going to throw a tantrum, but eventually you got to learn to behave. That's it. So, yeah.
If we didn't have so much evidence of how much vaccines have helped us throughout history since they've been invented, and so little backlash that has actually happened from vaccines that even have gone wrong, like comparative, like everyone got this. If there was something wrong, we'd be seeing it by now. I didn't get my Superman powers, which I believe that the Venezuelan or somebody I can't remember who it was. Somebody was talking about how I should be getting my Superman powers, and I didn't get them. So I'm kind of disappointed that I signed up for the superpowers. I got the superpower to go back out into public, and I feel you when it comes to like I just went to Walmart and you have to go and mask up again, and it's like I thought this was done. Like I don't like masks. I did it for the time period. I just stayed in my house, but it just is, you know. I just don't feel like it's political. I don't care if you're left or right or whatever. Let's all just kind of not have disease like rampaging around our country.
Like it's not, and it shouldn't be. That's kind of where I'm at. Like none of this should be. I don't care. Look, generally, you know, I'm in Madison, so I'm a dope smoking hippie, you know, progressive leftist. But like, dude, I don't really care. If you want to like talk civilly about where your municipal tax codes are going,
right,
like
yeah.
Dude, that's fine. I have plenty of friends who lean pretty far right, and we get along. But like this is not an issue with them. You know, they're like, oh yeah, like that science is not political, and I'm like, thank you, Jesus, oh my God. You know, but anyway, you know, without making this a whole a bitch cast. So that I've been dealing with a lot of interesting emails that have come through. But you know, the silver lining, the thing that keeps me going on all of this is of the 400 tickets we sold, we have only had 4 people who have, you know, like requested a refund on over email or whatever. And so like, you know, 1%, I'll take that.
That's unbelievable. Just based on what I saw, like I'm wondering how many people are like, okay, I have to go get it now. Like I gotta go do it. Like, dang it.
Well, and most of the people, I will say like 99% of the people who are commenting on my post about, you know, must be vaccinated to come to Manitoba
aren't even coming.
They're not coming. They were never coming. They didn't have tickets. You know, they don't even care. They're just commenting to comment. So it's, you know, it's okay. I will, you know, it's heartening to me to see that, and to see that we've been able to, over the years, to cultivate a fan base of cool nerds, you mm-hmm. know, and generally cool nerds, like, watch out for each other. You know, we care about each other. There's not a lot of, I don't know, there's just not a lot of, like, individualism in cool nerds, maybe because we just all watch Star Trek all the time, and we're like, that's what we want. We want to say T, Earl Grey hot, and just boom, there it is, and we're not going to get there by, like, you know, not sharing, you know, and not playing nice in the sandbox, so.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No, it's a different kind of group that you kind of get when you get the nerds together. And it's evolved since the 80s so much. Like, you know, if you get your stereotype, like, now everybody plays D&D, like tons. It's just all over the place. There really aren't any nerds anymore. It's just, you know, do you play games? Oh yeah, of course I do.
Like, I'll tell you what, you know, being an old man, you know, and growing up in the 80s and whatnot, I was the fact now that I can go out to a symphony that is playing, you know, Final Fantasy music, mm-hmm. and the fact that, like, there are big bands that are huge online that are playing renditions of, like, Mario music, just like somehow makes all of that, you know, angst and teasing and all that sort of stuff when I was a young kid about being the nerdy kid just absolutely dissolve into the ether, because it's like, holy, you know, like, holy shit, we won
the war.
Knew this was cool when I was a little kid, but everybody called me fucking nerdy about it. No, we won. We're, you know, everybody else could, you can go take your, you know, whatever terrible life you have now, but no, this is now the culture. We won. We got it.
I feel like Chrono Trigger theme music at the Olympics this year was like our victory lap, where it was just like, here you go, the greatest game I've ever created. We're not remaking it, but we'll put it into the Olympics, man. Here you go. We know it exists, and y'all love it.
So I love Chrono Trigger, absolutely love it. I will say though that Chrono Trigger is my number 2. My number one game of all time, hands down, 100%, Final Fantasy VI.
Okay.
Is my number one game of all time. And I will tell you that all of the Mad with Power Fests have been themed around a video game based on, like, that number, right? So Mad with Power Fest 3 was Super Mario Brothers 3 themed, and we had everything Super Mario. Mad with Power 4 this year is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 4 Turtles in Time
mm-hmm.
themed. So we've got pizza by the slice on the patio. The special gold VIP prize is a pizza cutter, like a Mad with Power pizza cutter. We've got a pizza patch, that, like a sew-on patch. So when we get to Mad with Power 6, I have big plans for Mad with Power 6. It is going to be Final Fantasy 6 themed. You are going to be so sick of Final Fantasy 6 when you see what I have planned for Mad with Power 6. It's going to be legendary. You're just,
no matter what price you put on any of that stuff, I will buy merch of crazy Lords of the Trident Final Fantasy stuff. That would be that would be up on the wall in a display case.
yep. So that's Mad with Power, right? That's a big chunk. The other big chunk that we got going on right now in terms of Lords of the Trident is, like I said, we just finished our latest album. It's a full album. It's our 10th release that we've done. Aki does not want me to call it our 10th album, because we've had EPs and we've had like acoustic albums and stuff like that. And there's obviously discussion online whether those count or not. I think they count.
I think they count. But, if it's on your website and it's like an individual thing, it's got multiple songs attached to what we would call a CD for all those kids back in, or well, all the old men, for the kids, it's this, a collection of MP3s that you, a playlist.
Yeah. But so theoretically this would be our I want to say this is our 6th full-length CD if you don't count everything else. Otherwise, it's our 10th release. And the really exciting thing about this album, besides it being a concept record, is we, over the years, we've had fantastic opportunities to share the stage with and spend time with some really, really amazing musicians and acts and people. And one of the groups that we got really close with really fast was Unleash the Archers. We ended up opening for them on their, I want to say it was their 2017 tour. It was either very, very late 2016 or very early 2017. And, the legend goes that they didn't have a place to stay. And I was telling them in the green room about, hey, you know, I'm a big fan. Next time you guys come through, instead of playing in Milwaukee, let's bring it to Madison. I can, you know, I'll pull out, you know, at least 100 people for you guys. It was a Sunday. The turnout wasn't all that great. And I said, and you can stay at my house. I got arcade games. I got a Japanese toilet. And they go, oh, you're the Japanese toilet guy that everybody's been talking about on tour. And I'm like, that's me. That's, you know, and apparently they had, because they had played with, you know, they'd been touring through the U.S. and they'd played with a bunch of our friends, and I guess we had come up in small talk many times, and they're like, oh, are you going to Wisconsin? Oh, you're playing with Lords of Trident? Oh, stay with Ty. He's got a Japanese toilet. You got to try this Japanese toilet. It's amazing. And they're like, what are you talking about? So. Essentially, I became, you know, Mr. Japanese Toilet Guy, and they stayed with me, and they had their lives changed forever by using my Japanese toilet.
So is this more than details. Is this more than a bidet then? So does it talk to you?
Don't even talk about my Japanese toilet like a mere bidet.
Oh, okay, yeah, no,
excuse
I mean,
me.
Yeah.
Let me tell. If you want this to be Toilet Cast, I will. This is the one thing that I can talk about for a long ass time. So, when we moved into this house here, the absolute first thing that I did, that me and my wife did, the first luxury item that we purchased for this house was 2 Japanese toilets, and we got like a mid high tier model of the Japanese toilet. Now, you might be asking yourself, why did I get 2? Japanese toilets? Well, because there is 2 bathrooms in this house, and if you only had 1 Japanese toilet, you'd only ever use that bathroom. The other bathroom would be always inferior. You'd be using the bathroom and you'd just be going like, oh, I feel so terrible. Why am I here? You know, it'd be just a terrible time. So my Japanese toilet, not only does it have the bidet, it's got an automated heated seat that has a timer in it that tracks when you have last used the toilet, and it keeps a timer going of like, okay, around 8 a.m. they usually use the toilet. So at 7:30, I'm going to heat myself up, and at 9:30, I'm going to cool myself down. It's got heated water. It's got multiple water pressure levels. It's got soft and hard bidet. It's got moving bidet. It's got an air dryer. It's got a butt massager. It's got an air filter. You don't smell anything ever. Dude, wow. It's the best. You know, you remember when the pandemic hit and everybody was talking about, "Oh, the toilet paper shortage."
You're like, whatever.
I didn't even know there was a toilet paper shortage. I had no clue there was a toilet paper shortage until one of my friends came by and asked if they could borrow a roll of toilet paper. I'm like, "Why?
Who are you?" What barbarian are you, non-civilized human? So tell me, how much does one of these go for?
That's the crazy thing. These are not that expensive. I am incredulous that more people in America do not embrace the Japanese toilet technology. Because like I ended up getting, you can install these on regular ass toilets. You don't need like a fancy, you don't have to replace your whole toilet. I installed my middle of the road Japanese toilet. The seat itself, you know, with all the features and everything, was about $350.
Oh man, you sold me.
Yeah,
that's so. I was waiting for like over $1,000, where I was gonna be like, I can't do that. But $300, I mean, that's pocket change, man.
One caveat is you have to have an outlet near the toilet, which most American houses do not have. But if you call like an electrician, mm-hmm. usually they'll be able to install one for about $100. So like all told, you know, it was about $450. Now, if you want to talk expensive Japanese toilets, eventually, once I hit that, like, we're making YouTube money and we're making like dumb money, you know, I want to buy my dream is to one day own the top of the line Japanese toilet model. Now this is $4,000, and it does replace your entire toilet, but it replaces your toilet with like a river stone, you know, like a single flat stone that sits in your bathroom. And it's got the bidet, it's got the wash, it's got all that sort of stuff, it's got the air dryer, got the filter. Here's the crazy stuff that it has. It's got motion sensors. So when you walk in, it'll automatically go like and open up the lid, and if you stand in front of it for more than a couple seconds, it'll open up the seat like you're a dude and you gotta pee. It's got motion activated LED lights. So if you're peeing in the middle of the night, you don't want to turn on the bathroom lights, dude. It's got you. It's got like runway lights going, and it's, you know, multicolored. If you sit down on the toilet, it will play an MP3 of your choice based on the profile that you've set up. So you can be listening to AC/DC's Highway to Hell while you're pooping, and that's totally fine. It will weigh you, okay? And it will also weigh... This is crazy. This is going to sound gross, but stay with me here. It will weigh what you deposit in it, and it will put it in a spreadsheet that you can access via your phone. Not only that, but you can control the entire toilet from your phone via Bluetooth.
That's crazy.
This is the pinnacle of toilet technology, and this is what I want. I want this. Like, one of these days, I'm gonna get it. I swear.
So, oh, that's awesome. That's, you know, what you should do is you should become a sponsor for them, and they'll give them to you for free. And then you could be like, I'm the American sponsor. Like, because I mean, it sounds like you could sell them. Oh, man.
Dude,
video.
Oh, if Toto of America would ever like contact me and be like, we want to sponsor your videos, I'd be like, I will do this for free. I don't care. Like, I want to be a toilet, you know, evangelist. I want to get everybody on this model. Here's the thing. Here's the other
change
thing,
America, right? Man.
I first ran into this tech when I was 14, and I went over to Japan for the first time, and I stayed with a host family, and I was just absolutely flabbergasted by A, how much better this was, and B, how much like general water it saved. One of the amazing tech things that they have in the Japanese toilet models that they don't have over here is when you flush the toilet, there's actually like a spout on the top bowl of your toilet, and the lid on the toilet is not concave, it's convex. So the water will run into the water that's filling up the toilet, runs into like a hole in the bowl. So you use that area up there as a sink to wash your hands, and then the wastewater that you've just used to wash your hands is what you use to flush the next time. It's like That's smart.
Efficient.
Like efficient and ingenious, and like that could save so much water. Like that, these toilets should be in every house in America. Damn it! Like I wholeheartedly believe this. Like,
just be careful, you know, because toilet paper company will come for you, man. They don't mess around. So
what do they got on their side? They got shit and bears. They got like babies in clouds. They've got a brawny. I could take that dude. I could arm wrestle him.
Oh, there you go.
You know, that's all they got. If that's all they got, bring on the bears and babies and brawny. Like, they just got three Bs. You know?
Now
like,
I'm imagining a music video of you, like, beating up all of the toilet paper mascots.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. So anyway, why were we talking? I can't remember why we were talking about this. So where's the trident? Unleash the archers. Unleash the archers. We were talking about Unleash the Archers. They stayed over. They had their lives changed by my Japanese toilet. The album that we're working on right now, we are having Jacob Hansen of Hansen Studios mix and master this record. And the only reason that we were able to get Jacob to do this is because of our connection with Unleash the Archers. And because of our connection with Paladin, who's playing the fest this year, Jacob Hansen, for those of you who are not familiar who this person is, he has produced almost all of the breakout albums for like young power metal bands that have moved them from like obscure to, you know, household name. He did all of the Avantasia records. He did the last two Unleash the Archers records that made them, you know, super huge. He's done stuff like Volbeat. He's done like all sorts of stuff. He did the last Flotsam and Jetsam record, which sounds amazing. So, you know, to say that he's somewhat of a kingmaker might be overstating it a bit, but like, dude is connected and does amazing work. And he usually only works with labels, so we were thankfully able to convince him that we were not crazy people, and he decided to work with us. I mean, you know, not crazy in the wrong way.
Right. Everyone's a little crazy. You just
I mean, talk to he's going to listen to me talking about Japanese toilets for 20 minutes, and he's be like, "I'm not no this band delete," you know. But so I am beyond the moon excited about working with him. I cannot wait to hear what he's done to our record. I really can't. So we're waiting on that right now. We had been working nonstop since January, like January to July, on this record. This is probably the most meticulous we've ever been on any record ever. We really went in and, you know, I mean, there were some things where we listened to it and it was like 2 cents off in terms of tuning,
mm-hmm.
and we go back in and redo it. You know, this is really, really, really like heavily scrutinized, and I think this is going to be our best record. It's definitely our catchiest record. It's definitely our most sing-along, like a bowl record. So that's coming out before the end of the year. We're going to have that done. What we're doing right now alongside of that record is we are producing a number of music videos that are going to go along with it. And we also have a really, really interesting release strategy that we've got planned for the record, which I can't talk about because it's something that I don't think it's ever been done before.
Hmm.
It's a brand new way of releasing, and I talked to there's a person who's doing PR for this record for us, who also generally does PR for major labels, and he said that it was so unique and different that he thought he could sell the story to Forbes, to, you know, as like a featurette in Forbes magazine, because it's such an interesting way of releasing music. So we're trying that. I don't want to say any more about it because it's, you know, very, very secret and hand wavy and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But we're making, to go along with it, we are making just an absolute ton of music videos that will be going along with it. So I'm working on that right now. Just working on getting stuff together, costumes, props, fire explosions, you know, getting those dialed in. Yeah, so we're doing that. We're going to release the album before the end of the year. We are playing with Unleash the Archers and Seven Kingdoms on their United States tour.
Okay, I was about to ask, if do you have any tours that you do United States-wise? I know that I've seen a lot of your stuff in Madison, but I don't live in other places, so I don't know if you actually tour there or not.
Oh, yeah, no, we tour all over the U.S. and all over the world. We did a Europe tour in late 2019. We just missed it. Just missed the coronavirus over there. It was good. and actually, in 2022, we're going to Japan. So we're doing a Japan tour then.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we had planned like a Southwest West Coast kind of a tour for December 2020, and of course that didn't pan out.
Mm-hmm.
But we got an opportunity to be we were going to be on a few shows with Unleash the Archers in the Midwest. Some interesting music business things happened that were nobody's fault, but local promoters and the booking agent, I'll say, and not even really the booking agent's fault. It was more, I don't know. Without going too much into it, it's local promoters and just, you know, working around tour schedules and stuff like that is really, really difficult when you're not signed to a major label.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of like back and forth and a lot of ignored emails for multiple months. Even though we were like green lit for this tour, and so we ended up only being able to get on one of the I think six shows that we were planning on being on. But the plus side of that is it's Chicago, so we're going to be on Chicago show that has been sold out for a long time. So we're really excited to be on the Chicago show, I'm beyond the moon excited to see Andrew and Grant and Brittany and just everybody on Unleash the Archers again, and everybody in Seven Kingdoms. We're gonna have them. They're gonna be sleeping in my house for like 3 days, and then a week later, I get to see them again and hang out with them again. So it's gonna be really fun. And by the way, I will say Grant from Unleash the Archers, one of the two guitar players, is on our record, our new record that we've got. He has been cast as the voice of evil. So he brought a lot of his like very evil screams to this record on I think three different songs. He is the official voice of evil for Lords of the Trident.
That's awesome.
Really excited to have him. Yeah. Other than that, we're just working on setting up more shows, hopefully. We're trying to get a couple of more live streams together. We have a live stream planned for October 22nd, once a year we do a Patreon only live stream where it's only open to the people who are pledging on our Patreon. And for this year's Patreon live stream on October 22nd, we're gonna play the entire brand new album front to back in order, with explaining the story as we go along and like showing concept art and showing pictures and all that sort of stuff. So it's going to be the first time that we're ever going to do that. So we're very excited about that. That's coming up on October 22nd.
I'm glad I'm a Patreon now. So
yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm glad about being a Patreon with a lot of other things that you guys give out. That's just it. I love all the stuff that you guys give. It's really cool.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of our focus just a lot of our general focus goes towards the Patreon, because I mean, honestly, that the Patreon is the thing that is driving Lords of the Trident right now. If we didn't have the, I will say, if we didn't have the Patreon, we would have broken up because of what happened to us in Europe. So that's a whole. I don't know if you want to get into that story, but that is a whole story, as well. I'll give you the TLDR,
okay.
Right, is that we had a very wonderful, very beautiful, very well-meaning person who we love and respect help us set up our European tour. This is the first time we'd ever been over to Europe. And he did a fantastic job at getting us our back line. He did a fantastic job at getting us our transportation. He did, however, forget to book any and all accommodations for us. And so the problem with that is that if you wait until the last minute and you have a bus and eight people, the only places that will have openings at the very last minute in Europe, in any major city, are not like the $30 a night hostels, but the $500 a night hotels. So we stayed in a lot of $500 per night hotels. And because of that, we came home from tour $9,500 in debt. And if we didn't have the Patreon, if we didn't have that monthly income coming in where we could say, okay, this is really, 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 really bad, but this will be paid off in
X amount 5 months. Yep.
Yeah. If we didn't have that income coming in, we would have been at each other's throats to this day about, I need $1,000. My credit card company is going to, you know, like they're taking the house. They're blah, 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 blah. Somebody's got to pitch in. And the band would have just dissolved because we would have been, you know, screaming at each other about money. So the Patreon literally has kept us together and is, you know, keeping us doing these crazy things that we want to do. I mean, Mammoth Power Fest would not be possible without the help of the Patreon, because if something goes wrong, you know, if the fest suddenly blows up and we can't hold it in the next 2 weeks, like, I would have to come up personally myself with like $15,000 to $17,000 to cover all of the, you know, all of the refunds. And I don't have that.
Right. Like, yeah.
I don't just have $17,000. Oh yes, it's in my rainy day fund, you know, for right. my second hot tub. No, I don't have that shit. I'm a musician. I'm poor. Like, no. So, you know, if Mammoth Power, or sorry, if the Patreon wasn't there, we wouldn't be able to take risks. Which, so it's mm-hmm. it's the number one thing that we're like putting our attention and focus towards. Also, I mean, like, the best fans are the ones that are on Patreon. I mean, not to you know, dismay the rest of the people who legitimately like us, but I mean, like, these people are literally like putting their money where their mouth is. You know, they're giving us a dollar or more a month, and like that's more concrete than like a Facebook like. You know what I mean?
Yep. No, and I found it kind of interesting to see, because I'm not really in the music world, but just like kind of from an outside of observation kind of point of view, it's like back in the day you had to sign up with like a major label in order to get any money, or you had to do a bunch of shows to do a bunch of money, from is my understanding of it. And now it seems like I'm just interested in your kind of point of view, is do you think it's better now, worse now, or what's completely different now, because it does seem like if you've got Patreon, you've got people supporting you directly, that seems better than being part of a major label. Like,
hugely better. So here's where being on a label makes sense. If you're an artist who, you know, you sit in your ennui chair and you say, all I do is make art, I do not want to look at the spreadsheet, I do not want to do any interfacing with my fans, I am making art, this is all I do, you know, then by all means sign with a major label. But I mean, most of the bands that are getting somewhere nowadays, and most of the bands that would attract a major label, are bands that have already kind of taken the bull by the horns and have created their own space for their fans and crafted their own following. You know, the only reason that a major label wants to book anybody now, wants to sign anybody now, is because they have, you know, momentum and money and fans behind them already. So, you know, nowadays the big thing that you get with a major label signing, and it's something that we actually considered pretty heavily. We were ready to sign a major label deal. We had a deal on the table. I can talk about that too. The thing that you get is you get this ethereal stamp of approval, right? So concrete example. Let's say I email like Prog Power, you know, the biggest power metal festival in the United States. And I say, hey, I'm with Lords of the Trident. You know, we've done this and this and this and this. We're coming out with our 10th record. We'd love to play on the festival, you know, or even if I were to email like a smaller festival, you know, they wouldn't respond. They would never, ever respond to like lordsofthetrident@gmail.com. Now, you know, the next day we get signed to Napalm or, you know, Nuclear Blast or Prosthetic. And all of a sudden, you know, the band hasn't changed. The music hasn't changed. Nothing about us has changed. But all of a sudden, because we're on a major label, they'll return our phone calls. They'll return our emails. We'll get on that festival. And that is the main frustrating part. It's like it's one of the only some people will give any bands the time of day, you know, essentially. Is if they're not on a major label, oh well, they're not, you know, they're not anything. They're small potatoes. When in 2021, being on a major label doesn't really mean much. I have a lot of friends who've been signed and dropped from major labels, where they didn't really do much. I mean, honestly, a lot of the bands still had to kind of work and do all that sort of stuff to get there. So it can be very frustrating as an independent band to sort of be passed over for, you know, I don't want to say like a lesser band, because nobody, you know, it's art, so it's like it's all relative.
Subjective,
like, you know,
yeah.
I might, you know, it's subjective. I might think they're not as good as us, but, you know, they, who knows? But it's weird that, you know, bands that are on these labels will get these opportunities, whereas bands that are doing, you know, 10 to 50 times more than these bands and maybe have a bigger following will just get completely left in the dust because they're not signed to a major label. That's the one thing that label signing gets you. The thing that you give up in return for that is essentially you give up almost all of your money for a lot of these. You know, the major labels will take 70 to 90% of any and all income that comes in. And not only that, they will take, you know, a lot of them will take direct creative control and direct like booking and routing control. There have been situations with some of my friends and some bands, which will remain nameless, where they're like, you know, I just got a promotion at work and now this label wants me to go out on a 4-week tour. I don't have the vacation time for that. I can't do that. I will have to quit this job, like in my field where I just got a promotion, to go play for, like, if we're lucky, $100 a night, you know, for five of us.
Ouch.
And so, you know, yeah, you can get on tours with, you know, with, I don't know, Dragon Force or whatever. But oftentimes you'll be paying in rather than actually making any money. Really, the only thing that you're making on that is exposure, which, you know, as you know, you can die from exposure. So,
right. Yeah. And if you're not making, basically once you've sold yourself to them, you can't really make that off. Can you have your own Patreon if you're assigned to a major label, or?
So that was one of the sticking points that we had with when a major label, there was a major label who I will remain nameless, that they sent an A&R rep down here to this basement, and we sat and we talked and we went through the contract. And I said to him, I'm like, look, I'm good to sign. I'm ready to sign. The one thing that we need to 100% disclose in this contract is that we keep full control of our Patreon and you do not touch any of that money. You know, because my main idea was like, okay, take all the royalties, take all the CDs, own the whatever. But I want to push people towards the Patreon. And I want to, you know, build that as our source of income. And they said yes to that. And we were ready to sign with them. And then they had two owners. One of their owners said, oh, my God, Lords of the Trident, sign those guys. Oh, my God, they do like 20 times more than any band we have signed to this label. Like, sign them right now, you know. And then the other manager was like, meh. They need better costumes and they need a different logo. And I don't like, you know, I don't like their look and blah, 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 blah.
What?
All, all things that we could have fixed, like, after we signed. And to show them how ready we were to work with them, within 72 hours, we had a new logo. It's the logo that we're using right now. And we had the costume designer for the Chicago Ballet, like, ready to go to make us full new, you know, new costumes, $3,000-$4,000 kind of a investment. And even with, and we did that in 3 days.
Wow.
You know,
okay.
No band would have ever done that for this label. And even with all of that, the guy, this is burned into my memory and burned into my mind, and it just makes me angry every time I think of it. He sent me an email. Okay, you're on the Patreon. You know how much I do. Mm-hmm. You know how much the band does. You
Absolutely.
Know how much we put out, how much content and how much videos and all that sort of stuff. He said to me in an email, "I just think Lords of the Trident could be doing more."
What?
Yep.
Like,
and that broke my brain. I was like walking around the whole day just like, "You want more? You want more?" You know, I couldn't even fathom what the hell that, like, how could we even be doing more? You know, like, so needless to say, that deal fell apart, and it's actually a good thing that it did. It ended up not being the right fit for us. You know, now, you know, hindsight, I realize, and especially, with the pandemic, you know, we would have signed with them and been announced, you know, late 2019. So,
okay. So
we would have been, you know, starting to just like ramp things up, and then the pandemic would have taken all of the wind out of our sails, at least in terms of how labels see things, right?
Yep.
We would have still done all the live streams and all that sort of stuff. But so it ended up being the right choice for us. And just in general, right, for bands starting up nowadays, I think the smart move for any bands watching and any bands interested in, you know, kind of getting out of the garage, the smart move is really not to look towards signing with a label. The smart move is to basically build your own brand, build your own following, clearly define, you know, who your major fans are, who are your super fans, and use your time and energy and effort and money, any money that comes in, to, you know, advertise directly to those people. You can do crazy things with Facebook's, you know, ad targeting and Instagram and TikTok. You can, like, I ran ads. I shit you not. I ran ads that said, I want 28 to 35 year old males that are working in IT that have used their phone in the last 5 days, who like Dungeons and Dragons, Magic the Gathering, you know, heavy metal, and are moderate to liberal, like, leaning. You know, I want all that. And Facebook handed that to me on a silver platter, and they're like, "Here you go. Here's, you know, here's 20,000 people in this in an area of like 2,000 square miles around a major city." You know?
Wow.
Like, you can do that stuff. And so if young bands can figure out who they're going to target and where they're going for, and, you know, all that sort of stuff, like, you can do that pretty easily. You can do it yourself, and you can make a big splash. That sort of targeted advertising is something that not a lot of bands are taking advantage of, but it makes a huge difference in popularity and in, like, you know, clout, essentially, people who know you. So, yeah.
That's good advice. Awesome. Yeah, that's, I think you could even bring that into, like, other, like, what I'm doing. I need to do more targeting ads on Facebook, and really, I did some very crappy ones that really didn't pay off very much, but the more that I see that, and especially with the way that you just explained it, there's the ability to get in there and be a little bit smarter with it, because I was being a little bit too specific, and I needed to be a little bit more, like, you know, just because it's the World of Darkness doesn't mean that people that play D&D might not, you know, be interested in it. And so you branch off from, you know, things that are similar to each other, not necessarily the thing that you're specifically doing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you know, I would also say that I think that, you know, the bands that go into this and the people, and not only bands, but, you know, podcasts and video creators and stuff like that, the people who actually dive in and do this are kind of the 1 to 5% of content creators who are really interested in growing their band or their brand or their, you know, video or podcast or whatever. So it the nice thing is it's not a super overtapped resource. And also, you know, if you get good at it, just like any of the skills that you need, you know, to have being in a band, you can transfer those over into like a quote unquote real job. Right. very, very easily. Like one of the things that I'm doing at my day job right now is I am helping them set up like, and I'm running their live streams. Where did I learn that? You know, I learned that from doing them down in my basement for my band, you know, like, and now I'm getting paid to do it. It's, you know, like I've had multiple people as music video clients this year who have paid me to come out on location and shoot a music video for them. And it's like, I just mess around in my basement, but I've done it enough times that people like see my work, they like my work, and they hire me to make music videos that look like that for them. You know, it's crazy the amount of skills that transfer over to other things from creative work, you know, from people that need to do this because they don't have the money to do it. You know, there's two types of creative people. It's either, you know, I'm going to save up the money and I'm going to hire somebody to do this, or I don't have the money and I don't think I will, but I really, really want to do this right now. Like, I really want to figure out how to make a music video. And yeah, the first one might suck and the first 50 might suck, but like eventually I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it right. And it's the same thing with marketing, right? You could start off and you could, your first couple campaigns, they might, you know, you spend $50 and they just don't go anywhere. But you learn from each one and then eventually you become really good at it. And then you're like, oh, he's a marketing genius, this man. It's like, dude, I just failed so many times that I eventually figured out something that works. Like that's it. You know, that's basically it.
That's life, basically. Yeah. If you just continue to do something until you stop failing. And if you're really upset that you failed the first time, you're probably not doing something that's worth actually mastering. So
absolutely. Yeah. So anyway, that was question number two. Right? Yeah. What are you up to? Oh my god, and it's been an hour. So.
But yeah, I had a question. Are you still banned from r/videos?
Yes.
I watched that whole thing go down. That was kind of interesting.
Wait a minute. You know, what is this?
Lords of the Trident, the channel, is banned from Reddit's r/videos. But
you've made it to the front page several times.
Many times, yeah. And the real downer about that, honestly, the real downer about that is that a lot of my like advertising intent, right, when I'm looking to grow our channel, has been built around my idea of like, I'm gonna make a good title for this, I'm gonna post it to videos, and hopefully it'll get to the front page. And that's happened like four times, and we jumped somewhere around 4 to 5,000 subscribers from just doing that consistently. The issue that I ran into this last time, the thing that got me banned, was I put a new video up. It was our Van Halen cover video, and I put a link to it in our Discord, and I said, "Hey, it's up. Here's the Reddit link," and everybody was like, oh, and they went in and they upvoted it all at once.
Yep.
Because we have some pretty rabid fans, and I put it on Patreon and I put it on Facebook, and you know, and so over the course of 30 minutes, it got like 60 or 70 upvotes, and the mods took it down. And I have a superstition that I never post from my own account my own videos, because every time I've done that, it's just gone nowhere. It's gone flatlined, absolutely. So, you know, the mods took it down, and I'm like, that's weird. I wonder why they took it down. So I posted it again from my account. And I said, hey guys, new link. I don't know why the old one got taken down, but here's a new link. And then they took that one down, and they messaged me directly, and they said, they said, tell me what upvote service you used, and perhaps I might let you keep your account. I'm like, you know, it was very much like a kiss the ring, and perhaps, you know, perhaps I will show mercy upon you. And I was, and I messaged him. I'm like, I didn't use an upvote service. I just posted it on our Discord. That's all, you know. And then I was explaining more about it. I was like, well, you know, so here's what I did. You know, I posted it here and I here, and like these are real people. They just probably all saw it at once. And I was trying to post that response to him. And they like banned me from messaging them for 30 days. So I was like, oh, cool. Yeah. I can't even, like, dude doesn't even respond, bans me from messaging for 30 days. And, oh, and he also posted a note. He's like, well, you have, you know, I don't believe you. And you've been, you and your channel have been banned permanently from r/videos. You know, now get out of my court, you peon. Probably what he said. Probably what he meant to say. And I was like, well, that's shitty. Like, I can't even explain. Like, I didn't use an upvote service. I very much did. We're just popular. I don't know what to tell you guys. Like,
Damn, man.
You know? And so I messaged him from another account. No response. After my 30-day ban was lifted, I messaged him the people again. I'm like, look, I don't know where the miscommunication was. I'm sorry that I posted the link to our Discord. I won't do it again. But I didn't use an upvote service. Like, I literally didn't. You know, I can try to prove it for you guys. I have screenshots and everything. And all they responded with was, this matter has been closed. Oh. You know, and I'm like,
wow,
that's bull.
So, I'm hoping that one day, you know, it's some sort of a, oh, the cat is here. Ladies and gentlemen, yeah. cat in chat. Yeah, it's Michi. I'm hoping that one day at some, you know, at some convention, I will find somebody who is a moderator for r/videos, and I'll get him drunk and I'll have him unban our channel. You know, or if he's, you know, if he refuses to do it, we'll find a more intriguing way to do it. You know, hey, why don't you come up to my room? I got some ropes, and we'll figure it out. You know,
we'll role play through it. Don't worry.
Yeah, right. You know, I'll roll a d20 for it. You know, but yeah, no, it was a real shitty thing. It was kind of a blow. And I had a bunch of really great videos that were coming up too. Where I had really great titles and all that sort of stuff. And the Van Halen video, like organically, was doing really good on its own. After the initial, like, you know, bump of I don't know, 20 or 30 upvotes, it was doing really good. And it was a real bummer to see it get taken down, because that was one that I knew had like mass appeal. You know, people love mm-hmm. Van Halen. The Queen video that we did was like the one of the biggest ones we'd ever done. Yeah, so it was just a real bummer. It was just a real bummer. Kind of threw me off like making videos for a while. You know. But you know, I'm hoping that
not the end of the world.
It's not the end of the world. It's just a temporary setback. I'm hoping that someday, you know, the Google gods will reach down their holy finger and touch one of my videos, and suddenly it'll be accidentally recommended to, like, you know, 50 million people like Ningen Isu. And then, you know, you never know. So I could have a Ningen Isu moment where all of a sudden everybody knows me. So
it could happen. And could the happen. Spectacle that you put on makes it so that they'll stay. So that's the beautiful part.
I hope so. Yeah. that sort of happened with the whole metal bands react to pop thing. You know, it was, I just showed up, you know, to it was an office building over by the Marcus Ultra Point Cinemas. And it was like a friend of a friend, like, hey, you guys want to watch some pop music videos and talk, you know, do a reaction? I'm like, yeah, whatever, you know. And he's like, we got beers. I'm like, say no more, fam. I'm there, you know. And I didn't think a thing of it. And then like two days later, it's got like 1.5 million views. I'm like, you know, like, I want one more of those. Just one more. That's all I need. But this time I want it on my channel.
Right.
I want it on my channel instead of somebody else's.
Awesome. Well, I think that I think we're at a point where we should probably wrap it on up. We're getting about an hour and a half in. But It's been really great, and I think what we want to do though is get you back on to continue, because I want to hear about like your dungeons. Like I mean a million things I could talk to you about, like for like the World of Darkness campaigns that you've been part of or stories that you've had.
Oh yeah.
You know, the any kind of like the craziness that happens at concerts, like you know, there's so much to definitely talk to you about, you know, and so we'll have to find another good time, I think, for us to kind of get all the different stories. But it's just been so great kind of hanging out with you. I just wanted to kind of open up, I mean, we could go on for a while longer for sure. I just kind of want to make sure that, you know, that I kind of want to open it up to be like, whatever you want to talk about, whatever you want to promote, any shout outs that you want to give, you know, is there something that, that's coming up that you're really excited about that, you know, is not about you,
yeah.
Whatever you want to talk about. I just want to give you like a spotlight here.
Yeah, well, shout out to you guys for letting me ramble along. You know, I appreciate you having me on. And I'd love to come back. You know, we'll do a 3-hour Japanese toilet review show. It'll be great.
That I'm down for. That you gotta get like you'll have to show it. You're gonna have to show it in use. You'll have to like.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah. Absolutely. The big thing that's coming up is Mammoth Power Fest coming up in 2 weeks. There are live stream tickets available at mammothpowerfest.com. We actually do have a number of a very, very, very small number, like 5 tickets where, you know, people had a family emergency or something came up work-wise and they can't go. So there, Mammoth Power Fest on Facebook, if anybody didn't get a ticket and wants to come down in the Madison area and see the fest, there's details on people selling their tickets on that page. So facebook.com/madwithpowerfest or just madwithpowerfest.com. Of course, lordsofthetrident.com is your number one stop for anything Lords of the Trident related. Make sure to use your most metal browser to access it. So that would be Chrome, because there's no other browsers that are named after a metal. I mean, Firefox, it's got fire in it, so that's a close
fire,
second.
Fire, but, you know. Yeah.
Fire,
yeah.
Fire makes metal.
Yeah. The real thing, and I mean, you know, obviously these guys know the thing that keeps us going is our Patreon, patreon.com/lordsofthetrident. We've got all sorts of crazy stuff. If you pledge to, you know, some of the higher tiers, the behind the scenes tiers, you can actually go in and listen to all of the demos from the for the new album right now. And we've actually got a standing contest right now for people to try to guess the correct order of the concept album. We haven't, you know, we've said this song is number one, this song is the last one, and we haven't said any other real details on it. So, you know, if people, we have a prize available for that one. So if people want to jump on there, patreon.com/swordsofthetrident, even if you just pledge $1, you get a bunch of extra content, a bunch of, exclusive video series that we do, like my Metal Beer Club review show. And you get access to the Patreon only live stream, which we're going to be doing in October. That's coming up. Obviously also, please go over to Lords of the Trident, youtube.com/lordsofthetrident and subscribe. We just hit 11,000 subscribers. Woo!
Yeah, that's awesome.
But you know, every subscriber helps out. We've been recently working with, people from like Guitar World and a bunch of different interesting, like sponsors and stuff like that. And the more people that we have allows us to work with bigger people, which is always fun. So yeah, go to youtube.com/lordsofthetrident and hit subscribe. I don't know. Once I survive Mammoth Power Fest, I think I'll be in a better space to like tell everybody about like the real cool stuff coming up. But there's going to be a lot of music videos that are going to be dropping shortly. And the new album will come out before the end of the year, and it will be absolutely amazing. It's going to be the best album we've ever done, and it's going to be the best sounding album we've ever done. If you want all the, like, I can't say much more about it, but like, if you get on the Patreon, you will say that was 100% worth it when the album comes out, and you will know exactly why. And if our PR dude thinking that we can get into Forbes with this doesn't, you know, doesn't interest you, then I don't know what would sell you on that. You know,
that's interesting.
So yeah, absolutely. Patreon.com/LordsOfTheTrident.
You also do Twitch on Mondays. You play games, yep. And you also do a lot of karaoke type stuff. Some of the best karaoke I have ever seen, and the concept that you have is beautiful. Like, I love it. Every time I can catch one of those, I'm always like, okay, I'm gonna drop some subs, we'll get some tips. And
yeah, so I do stream every Monday night playing Sega CD games. I'm a big Sega CD nerd. I love those old full motion video games. They're just so bad, you know, they're so bad they're good. So, you know, we're doing that. And then, like you said, we do a bunch of different streaming concert series. We've got the Baron solo shred sessions, which we haven't done for a while, but we're going to look at starting back up, where it's like a Sunday afternoon, you know, guitar session with backing tracks and video and all that sort of stuff. The Drunken Quarantine Karaoke has been a big hit. And what, you know, for those of you who've never tuned in for one, basically I have a big list of songs that people can pledge to make me sing. You can also give me $5 to take a drink or $20 to make me take a shot. And the last four times we've done it, we've gone for 5 hours. So you can imagine by the end, I'm a big, you know, sloppy drunk mess trying to sing Britney Spears. And it is hilarious and sad and, you know, all of the above. But we raise money. All of our live streams, we're raising money for various charities. So the last Drunken Quarantine Karaoke, we raised $1,600 for cancer research. And the one before, we did the Clean Air and the Native American Rights Fund, the Native American Legal Fund, NARF. Native American, yeah, Rights Fund. It's a legal thing. On Twitch in general, 50% of anything we make on bits and subs and all that sort of stuff goes to the ACLU. We're trying to basically just raise money for good while we're all trapped down here in quarantine, you know, doing the best we can. So yeah, twitch.tv/LordsOfTheTrident, twitch.com/LordsOfTheTrident. We're on there too. So
awesome. Yeah. And so have you ever thought about making a karaoke edition for Lords of the Trident? Because that's something that I would love to sing, Lords of the Trident, but I don't have a karaoke edition that really makes it, like, really easy for me to, you know, I have to do all the work in order to get a karaoke edition right now of your stuff.
So, I will say that we do have one karaoke track online. If you look for Lords of the Trident karaoke, a million years ago, I was co-hosting a karaoke night with somebody else here in town. And, you know, we had some fans come out and they wanted to sing Lords of the Trident. And so, you know, that night I went home and I made a karaoke track for the song Chains on Fire.
A good one. Good one.
There will, again, I don't want to give away too much, mm-hmm. but for this new record, yeah, there's going to be something
mm-hmm.
related to karaoke. Maybe also something related to our Japan tour.
Oh,
this is all very secretive, right? Very in the works. Coming up. But, you know, I will say that, you know, perhaps in some way your wish will be granted in the next maybe 6 months or so.
Don't say anything that'll get you fired. So,
yeah, fired from my own band. Yeah. We're kicking you out and we're taking your basement with us. What? Like, oh, we live here now. Huh? What? Okay.
Don't you know common law law? We've been a band for this long. This is how it goes.
Exactly. That's what it is. They own 50% of my basement now. They get to sleep here. Yeah, so we got that coming up. We try to be as much on the internet as possible. We got a Discord too, and you know, all that sort of stuff. Before I go, I did promise you a story
about
the Metal Sea.
Yes.
And since this is the age of stories, I have to tell you this story. So, you know, my physique may not reflect it at the current moment, but maybe, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, I was really heavily into parkour. I was running with a local parkour crew here in Madison for about 4.5 years. and I just absolutely adored it. You know, I was out every Saturday. We were out for multiple hours, and it was just the most fun. We climb up, you know, climb all the buildings in Madison, and we jump from rooftop to rooftop, and we do flips and tricks, and oh my God, it was so much fun. And I will say, nothing gets you to, you know how people, when they're exercising, they're like, I'm going to give 110%. Mm-hmm. Nothing gets you to 110% like the fear of imminent death.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if I don't make this, I will drop and fall four stories. Like, that gets you to 110% real fast, let me tell you.
So you started doing stuff similar to what happened on The Office when they started getting really extreme.
Yep. So I had a really good run. I had about 4.5 years of parkour. One day I was doing a very, very, very normal, very, very, very boring trick. I had done it 15, 16, 20 times that day. And we were about to move on to the next place. And I said, let me do one more. I did one more. And I landed it wrong. And I tore my ACL. And I didn't know it at the time, but I got an MRI, ACL's gone. So I ended up getting a surgery to fix that. I also tore my meniscus, which is like the little padding in between your kneecap and all that sort of stuff. There's squishy pads in there, and I tore that. Usually what they do when you tear your meniscus is they'll just pull it out. They'll just rip out the part that you know, you tore, and then you don't have that padding anymore, and you got to be real careful about jumping and all that sort of stuff. The doctor that I had to fix my ACL said, you know, the meniscus is pretty close to a blood vessel. I think if we suture it up, if we fix it, I think it'll heal. I'm going to give you like a 75% chance that this thing will be just A-okay. And I'm like, cool, I'll take those odds. So, ACL surgery, months, you know, 6, 7, 8 months of recovery. It was brutal. But, you know, I'm back. I'm doing Taekwondo. I practice and teach Taekwondo. I'm back doing Taekwondo, but I'm just doing like real simple exercises, you know, jumping up and down on one leg, just, you know, slow and easy. Still getting the recovery mode. So I'm 8 months out of surgery and I'm at Taekwondo and I'm jumping up and down on one leg and I jump up and down on one leg 20, 30 times. And then on the 31st time, I land and I hear this big pop.
Oh.
And nothing hurt. I was just like, wow, that was loud. Like, I mean, it was audible. Everybody turned and heard it. They were like, are you okay? I'm like, I think so. I don't know. That was really loud. So I go home. Everything's fine. I wake up the next morning, and my knee is like the size of a watermelon. Apparently, what had happened is I had torn the sutures in my meniscus, and it was wide open, and it was filling with fluid. So I went and got another MRI, and they're like, I'm so sorry, that meniscus has got to go. And I'm like, shit, okay, another surgery. All right. So the first time I went in for surgery, right? You know, I don't know if you guys have ever been in for any surgeries before. They take you into this room and they get you all prepped and they make sure it's the right leg and all that sort of stuff. And then what they do is they put you to sleep before they roll you into the operating room. So they put the stuff in your arm and they say, count down from 10. And you go, 10, 9, and you just fall asleep. The meniscus surgery, they got me all prepped. They make sure it was the right leg. They didn't put me to sleep. They roll me into the operating room, and I see all the machines and the dudes that are all masked up and the doctor and the machine going like, bing, bing, and I'm like, and I'm just sitting here like, are you guys going to put me to sleep or what, you know, are you going to put me under? And the doctor leans over my face, right, gets right up in my face, and he goes, and he takes his mask down, and he's like, hey, man, I'm a really big fan. I thought that maybe you'd like to, you know, go to sleep in style. And he puts the mask back up and he, like, hits a button on a remote. And they start, in the operating room, start blaring the metal C. It's da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I'm just sitting here, like laughing, like, oh, my God. And he's like, yeah, man, all right, we're going to take care of you. And I'm like, cool, wait, what? And he's like, hits the injection. And I'm like, are we, and I just, like, as as I lose consciousness, I can hear myself like singing, which is the weirdest fucking thing in the world. You know, hearing your own voice as you lose consciousness. I woke up with an absolutely wicked sore throat. You know, didn't happen to me this first time, but holy crap. I woke up and I'm like, oh my God, what the fuck happened? You know, and I'm coming out of this anesthesia. And the nurse said, so, funny story. You wouldn't stop singing after they put you under. Like, they put you under and you were singing at the top of your lungs in the operating room, singing along to this, to the metal C. And they were trying to get the breathing pipe into your mouth because you were like, you know, asphyxiating because you wouldn't stop singing. So they turned the music off and they like forced this thing down my windpipe. And I was like, and just like jamming it down my throat so I didn't die. And that's my metal C story, you know, like big fan. The doctor who did my my knee surgery was a big fan, apparently.
Oh my God, that's the best story I've ever that's insane.
It's so wild. It's like something that you think I would make up, but like, no, God, like, you know,
that's too crazy to make up. You can't.
I know. It was wild. Absolutely wild. So
awesome. That is, I think that's a great, great story to end us here on. Thank you so much for being on. It's been a blast. I definitely want to get you back on and going to hit you up. You know, definitely like watching your Monday night streams that you do. I love the games that you're playing on there.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So definitely check out lordsofthetrident.com. Check out their Patreon. We'll have links for everything, for their Twitch, to their Patreon, to their primary website. So you can go and check out all the stuff that they've got there. Definitely check out our new website, theageofstories.com. There we've got a lot of the different things that we're working on. We're right now, there's craziness that's going on. Our Discord is going nuts right now because we got a huge streamer that has just signed on to be into an alliance with me on EVE Online, this crazy MMORPG. We're fighting for the Galente. Join up. Join for the cause. We're the underdogs. We own nothing. We're going to fight our way to the top. Fight for your right to live. We're going to do this. And you know, there's just lots of other stuff that we do. We've got Mage the Ascension game that we run every Monday, Technogate. We're going to be transitioning that over to our year 2000 game. So it'll be Technogate 2000. We're doing a little intermediate kind of thing that we're doing in between seasons here, where we're going to be doing our Madison Under Siege module that we're going to be running here. So I'm going to be creating a book called Madison Under Siege for Mage the Ascension. It's going to be a city book for Mage the Ascension. And my plan is to have a module at the end of it that you can play out using either the provided pre-made characters, NPCs that you can take control of it, or if you want to add it into a pre-existing campaign or make new characters. I mean, basically the pre-made characters, we already have a character creation done for it. So they're just people made characters and I've just incorporated them into the book and I'm canonizing them into my system. But you feel free to create your own characters or use what we've got. We're going to try and create one of the, a module that can be used for the World of Darkness that hopefully won't be too kind of crazy. The module history of the World of Darkness is not the greatest and we're hoping to try and breach that barrier a little bit. And I think the key to it is to have the pre-made characters that give you like an idea of what would happen. And then we're going to have a live actual play of that module. And so the plan is that, you know, if you want to, when you buy the book, you like the module, but you're like, well, how would this play out? You can watch we're planning on it being about a 3-hour long module that you can bust out in 3 hours, sit down, just have a good time for Mage of the Ascension, learn a little bit of the mechanics and a little bit of the world. Other than that, check us out on twitch.tv/goldenagestories. We do our Twitch every Monday, 7 p.m. Central Time. Wednesdays, we have an EVE Online fleet. Thursdays, we do Stellaris. Mondays, of course, is our Mage game. But yeah, we have so much stuff going on these days. So check it all out on our website. And thank you all so much for listening and see you next week.